Hi, everybody.
Hi, guys. Just to let you know, episode 20. Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon. We're trying... What the hell, man?
I'm Jim.
And that... Well, no, I'm over here now. I'm still Chevy.
Get up there.
We're trying for something else. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
You're good. We're seeing this little layout here. Hopefully, it's a little bit better for you.
Yeah.
We're on episode 20 now.
Yes, we are.
Thank you for helping me get to episode 20.
You're quite welcome. Thanks for having me.
That's a little podcast milestone. I've done a lot of shows, so when we hit 20, it's kind of like, oh, we'll keep actually doing that. it does. You'll be surprised. Well, it's hard to get to 20.
Well.
But we're going to cover Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon from 2006, one of my all-time favorite horror movies.
Mine now.
Glad you like it.
Honestly, this is one of those, I don't want to say it was independent kind of sort
somewhat,
of. But
low budget, yeah.
Low budget, whatever, but I never heard of it until you told me about it last year.
Yeah.
And it's a great movie. It's, once again, along the lines of spoof or...
But it's its
somewhat
own horror.
Somewhat comedy, but the comedy goes away. It really does.
Yeah, halfway through, it just stops and it becomes its own horror movie. And,
yeah.
It's
and you can
exciting.
Definitely tell that how they filmed it in the movie, where the mockumentary mm-hmm. documentary
which we should
stops
tell them.
In this. Well, yeah. Well, yeah.
The whole premise.
Once again, here I go.
The whole premise, if you never heard of the movie.
Jim is more well-versed on this than I am, so I'm going to let Jim give a good synopsis.
Quickly. Yeah, it's basically a movie about a college film team that are going to do a basically behind-the-scenes look at a serial killer, a guy who wants to come back and be like Jason, Michael, Freddy, all them guys.
Who all exist in,
they're all in
the
same
real
universe.
World. So,
so awesome.
And you can see that in the beginning, too,
mm-hmm.
whenever they talk about, you know...
Yeah, they talk about Freddy and Jason, Crystal Lake,
well,
then Freddy, then
yeah,
Michael.
Most, more so or less, you know, the man from, you know, Springfield mm-hmm. to...
Yeah, yeah.
If you even dream about him, rumor is you'll die in your sleep, and they try to bring him into the real world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's cool. And then they talk about Jason, he comes back every summer.
Defending his territory.
Yeah. And Michael and all that. So
the prodigal son, Michael Myers.
Yeah, I mean, aside from some of the really, really bad B movies, C movies I've seen, this is one of the best movies that actually do... acknowledge other horror movies and other slasher killers, and like they're in the same world and they've existed like we do with Ted Bundy, Jeffrey Dahmer.
Right, and I would kind of call it like Scream's child, because Scream kind of, I don't want to say Scream spoofed it. It was a serious movie,
yeah.
But you know the rules and this and Don't Run Upstairs mm-hmm. and The Virgin.
Yeah, they talk about all of that.
Yeah, they take this movie takes it to a whole another level.
Yeah, it's not like they're talking about horror movies. They're talking about the real world,
right?
In this movie, which is really cool. So, and they basically follow this guy around who's trying to come back as this Leslie Vernon guy who was killed over a waterfall by the townspeople 20 years ago, but really he's a different guy altogether, just coming back to assume that identity.
Did he really make up the identity, or was it just
no? That was a legend from the town.
Okay,
but he
okay.
knew that and then went back to try to. You know,
that's what I gathered,
be
too.
Be Leslie Vernon. He was Leslie Mancuso was his real name, and he was a crazy person in the hospital, and he had a doctor who, in this movie, is played by right there, Robert Englund.
That was Robert Englund?
I think so, yes.
Guy looked familiar.
And he's wearing the trench coat, has obviously the Dr. Loomis vibe going, and it's really cool that he was able to do that, and they talk about Freddy in the movie, and he's in the movie. It's really cool. And they have a lot of references. Jason's in the movie. Kane Hodder lives in Freddy's house. We'll talk about all that later, too, probably.
Yeah.
And then Scott Wilson from Walking Dead, met him in Pittsburgh a couple years ago. Really, really sweet guy.
Very nice guy.
He saw me in the hotel and saw my tattoo, and he was like, oh, come over to the table when you get over there. I'll take a picture with you. So he walked over, and just came over and said, come on, man, take a picture with me.
Those are the celebrities, the
mm-hmm.
movie stars that are the
he
ones
so
that I really
cool.
want to go with. Like, Tom Cruise, fuck you.
Yeah, but like, he was so cool. And, but then there's a big twist at the end where what we thought was happening really isn't happening, and we'll get to that also, too. But this is really one of the smartest movies I've ever seen.
Yeah, and that's what I want to talk about, too, the whole twist at the end. Because that's why I was asking about, you know, Leslie Mancuso,
mm-hmm.
the main protagonist.
That's who Nathan Basil plays
yeah.
in the movie. Leslie Vernon, but his real name is Leslie Mancuso.
That's why I was wondering if he just, you know, they say he's from Las Vegas or Reno,
yeah,
or wherever.
Yeah. Ding-a-ding.
Sorry. Did he just make up the whole thing about Leslie Vernon? Was it really an urban legend? I mean, did he just find this abandoned house and all that? I mean,
No, I believe the whole story was true.
See, I kind of was going both ways.
And like, he would be like a psycho on the internet looking for urban legends or something, and he probably found, much like we have urban legends around here, every town has them. And Bray's, oh, wow, that's a good one. And he's all the way over in Reno, so he goes all the way to Maryland. Obviously, he's not going to know anybody. He can keep up and leave. So I think it was an urban legend story he went to try to make true.
But he went way...
Yeah.
You know, and you can see it when he's when he starts moving about town in with Taylor and Doug...
Yeah.
And Todd and everything. He's got, you know, step one, you, let me see. Step one, you know, you got to anchor your legend. Well, you know, the legend of Leslie Vernon, the anniversary of his death, the house, blah, blah, blah. And teenagers go there to do whatever teenagers do.
The old abandoned house, you go there, you smoke
exactly.
Weed,
whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Then after that, you know, he's outside. Apparently, he wasn't in... What's the name? I can never remember. The Glen...
Glen Echo?
Echo.
And that's actually the name of the production company.
I keep wanting to say Glen Eden, and I don't know why.
Glen Echo Entertainment, actually.
But then he's telling him, look, okay, outside of this school or church or whatever it is, here's my target group. Now you got to have your target group. They might be good because look how young they are. They're full of vim, vigor, and they can do this, and they're sexual prime, and yada, 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 and, you know... But he doesn't pick them. He already has somebody picked out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's not really said in the movie. I'm calling it, this is when they were at the library, when everything starts. I called it planting the seed, where he makes the, you know, the clipping of, you know, apparently.
The backstory.
The backstory. What we think is the, you know, last girl, the virgin, Kelly Curtis, you know. He's like, oh, it's all Photoshop. They took her face. Oh, it's her great uncle. He raped my mother, blah, blah, this and that. And he goes into making everything real. I mean, you know, and we even see it towards the middle of the movie, how he plans everything out. We're talking like...
Oh, yeah, everything.
Wow. He,
all the things
he
that
set
you
up
think,
everything.
All the things you think that, like, the characters in horror movies, like, why don't they do this? Why don't they do that? They reference that. Like, why don't they break out the window in the first floor? There's always a second floor above. Why do they go on a roof?
And they
say about it. Like, they're going to go on a roof, and then he plans for them to do that.
And he actually says, I've cut all the limbs so they can't climb, but the ones on the second floor I've actually cut through to kind of sabotage it. And, you know, you sit there.
Sabotage with the weapons.
Yep. Exactly.
So we see why these Jason and Michael get back up all the time, and the weapons are, you know,
exactly.
He's kind of like explaining you why these killers survive.
So
because
it's
they
kind
set
of
traps and shit.
Yeah, it's kind of cheating, but it's not. It's called preparation.
Yeah,
you know. But and after I saw this movie the first time, sitting there going, okay, I can remember how many horror movies or whatever they climb out a window, they're on a roof, and he even says it. If they climb out the window on the second floor and they get on the roof, they're basically fucked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got. A tree has been there for how many years, and all of a sudden somebody climbs and snap.
Yeah.
Okay, so now you're thinking to yourself, all right, did Jason do this?
How many times
you
have
we
seen that in a horror movie?
Exactly. And it's very smart
writing.
It's a brilliant script.
Halloween 4, them out on the roof with Michael. He chases them out from the attic onto the roof. I'm like, damn, dude, he went out on the roof. Like, he knew they were going to do that.
Yep,
like,
exactly.
He planned it. Like, that's really cool to think. So, like I said, the writers were so smart with this movie. Getting the famous people they got in it, the librarian from, you know, she's from Poltergeist,
Zelda,
Rubenstein,
Stein,
it's whatever, yeah.
This house is clean.
I couldn't imagine Leo with that voice every day though.
I don't know if that was her actual voice or if that's the voice.
Every
that
time
she,
I heard her talk, it was like that.
It's true.
I think she was a little person, so
well,
it makes
yeah.
sense. So.
I've only seen her in a couple movies, Poltergeist.
Scott Wilson from Walking Dead. We referenced him already, and he's wearing a hat from Cruise Market in Texas. It's actually a sponsor from the movie that you see in the credits, their name. I'm like, it's really cool because I saw the word and I thought it said Krug. I'm like, oh, another Kruger reference, but it says Cruise.
It took me a while to read it. It was like, what the hell does
that
say?
So I actually paused it, looked at it. I'm like, oh, I looked it up and I'm like, oh, it's real.
And it's kind of
they're cool. Open right now.
Yeah, it's kind of cool that You know, he's wearing that hat, and it's out when they're barbecuing, making the...
Yeah, it was his, it's actually a sausage company.
Yes.
So it's their sausage they're grilling
in the
movie.
Yeah, the kielbasa or whatever you want to call it.
They've been grilling since 1901.
1901?
I did look them up, yes.
Did you?
There's Ms. Zelda. She is the first death, too, by the way.
Yeah, she is.
At the hands of Leslie, and then we
Let's, now you're you say that, well, let's talk about the deaths.
We will. And hopefully there's a death video on this episode.
I do believe
I
there is.
We'll find one, and I'll put that on there for you.
I do believe there is, but I've got a problem with the numbers.
Okie dokie.
But the kills in this one, I don't want to say... I mean, there's nothing spectacular. I mean,
No, this movie definitely not
I mean,
not
you
kills,
know,
no.
There's some throats being slit, a pitchfork, which I loved, by the way, how they did it, how they had the appliance on the guy.
Mm-hmm. And then he actually
And the Leslie... is standing behind him. When the guy slides, he kind of moves his fork and moves it so it looks like the guy fell off the fork, which is kind of cool. The fucking post hole digger.
Mm-hmm. In the heart.
By far my favorite. I have never seen somebody in a horror movie or a slasher movie get killed by a post hole digger.
Yeah, dude's on the ground, he puts it in his chest, and you see the heart come up, and then he puts it in his hand, and the kid holds it up, and then holds it up to his face. I mean, it's cool as shit.
Yeah,
I mean really jello-y blood, but still, it's okay.
Well,
it was cool.
But none of the... They weren't over-the-top kills. I mean, he wasn't trying to... The directors and the producers and everybody involved with the movie wasn't trying to... Friday the 13th. Friday the 13th, part 6. You had to start going every... I came up with the same kind of thing every year for Halloween. I did something for Halloween. What am I going to do next year? I got to do something bigger and bigger and bigger. This didn't have any of that. I mean, we had a good old-fashioned off-screen neck snapping with the double.
It was all sound effects. Like when you went in the bedroom, all you hear is the stabbing. And I do think this was a conscious decision by the writers, too, because... When you have a good script, you don't need
to rely
on gore, nudity. Exactly. There's a little booby showing, but it's very funny.
Hey, who's telling the story, you or me?
Me.
Those things were about... Never mind.
They were. They flipped out. Like,
wow.
National Geographic. But
you could have rested a coconut on
it. But they came out. That's it. But it was kind of jokey because the way they did it, it was funny. It wasn't sexual at all.
But that's another thing, too, though. If you're really... I mean, it took me a couple times to watch this because the first time going through, like, whenever it's revealed that it was never Kelly as the final girl, it was Taylor.
Yeah.
There are small hints all the way through it. Sorry. Bad co-host. No, but like you said, and the biggest one is, they go upstairs to try to help Kelly out, and Kelly's... Yeah, wait a minute. That's not what a final girl is.
No.
And even the position she was in definitely means that she knows what's going on.
Yeah.
So
I think right there is whenever Taylor started realizing something's not right.
Right, exactly. I mean, you take a look at the way Taylor, no makeup, she refuses a beer, phone goes ding-ding again.
Speaking of ding-ding, I want to let everybody know that if you ever watch an episode and you want to contact us, if you ever want to message us...
Let me shut this off.
We'll answer your questions. If you want to contact the show, we'll let you know when we're recording, and we might be able to schedule a call for you to come in.
Oh, absolutely.
A couple people have asked us, but I'm letting you know on the show.
Yeah.
Message the page if you want to ask a question on the show.
Yeah, even with the, like I said, the whole, final girl and everything and all that shit. I mean, just the way Taylor was dressed, once again, no makeup, buttoned up like a damn icebox, refuses the beer, and you could see where he's... It's suggested that, you really got to pick it up, and old horror fans that have watched this stuff countless number of times will pick up on things like that. Very subtly done, but very, very good way of, basically taking what Leslie lays out to everybody, and just, that's not his plan at all. He's planned Taylor from day one, that she's going to be the final girl, everything.
And there's also a moment, too, where they're sitting somewhere, and he cries and says, I'm so happy. And he says, we got a couple hours. I'm going to go make final preparations. He's doing that alone for the other parts he was doing with Taylor and the other guys.
Right.
So right there is where I believe he was making the changes for them. So that's why everything was done
I think it was a way to throw Taylor off. I mean, I really think he had everything planned out as we see it.
Yeah. And then after those three, he knew she was on the hook.
Yeah.
And then, like, because he knew she was going to go for the axe in the back of the shed, so he broke that one because he told her about the ones in the front. So he did that the last couple hours, I think.
Yep.
So
the pickaxe was even broken or whatever, you know, just in case, you know, mm-hmm. They don't get me on the first swing.
Yeah.
Or, the whole thing about, you know, his whole theory behind everything, empowering the virgin to make her strong and get, you know, into the man's world, the whole thing with, you know, all that stuff. And
yeah,
just, you know, kind of, like I said, it was brilliant.
I agree.
It was brilliant. I really, really enjoyed it.
But there's definitely times where I'm watching this movie and I'm like, okay, that's definitely not on a microphone, by the way.
I don't know.
But, I'm going to cut here, but I'm going to make a little cut here. So we'll just...
Whatever you got to do.
We'll come back to this one.
What are you going
to
do? For what?
I don't know.
We ain't making no cuts. All right. We're all live here, baby.
I usually do.
We're live here. What were you going to?
I don't remember. I was losing my train of thought there. I don't know.
We were going to talk about, like, the final way everything was done. Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Since we were talking about how he was planning and everything.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that he really doesn't focus on too much is when he either in not the shed, but the final little garage or whatever that had the cider press.
Yeah.
He dwells on the weapons. Oh, this one's been rigged. Oh, I've rigged this, rigged that. He doesn't say too much about the cider press.
No.
Okay. You know, I mean, I really think, I mean, if he was as brilliant as I think he is in the movie, planning all this stuff out, and even the cardio. You don't know how much cardio I have to do to try to make it look like I'm just walking, and everybody's running, which was another funny part. I really, the first time I saw that, I laughed my ass off. But I believe the cider press was rigged. So it really didn't kill him. Even the part where...
No, he made it seem like it wasn't anything when he said, well, what's going to happen? I wasn't going to make some apple.
Exactly.
He made it seem like it wasn't a weapon at all. And I think he took it made a fake bottom or something, and his head was able to go down.
Yeah, and the brilliance of it too, whenever he's putting, like, you know, getting prepared for the night, you know, putting the stuff on his face, you know, nice little. Oh, I've even added some fireproofing to it, so you know, blah blah blah. Was he 100% sure that Taylor was going to burn the place down? I mean, we saw the gas cans and everything, and you know, which leads to the nice little stay through the ending credits. Yeah. I'm telling you right now, stay through it.
I mean, you get to hear a song the whole time, which is Psycho Killer.
And you get to see some stuff too. I'm not giving that one away. Don't you dare give it away.
Well, yeah, just watch till the very end of the credits, by the way.
Yeah,
And look closely, because I noticed last night it was pretty hard.
Yeah, it
was pretty hard to see this through the credits when I was looking.
Well,
last night. But I saw it originally, like, really good.
Yeah,
it was weird. Yeah. I knew it was there.
But even even with going back to all the planning and everything, and I tried the spark plugs when he's getting ready and he's sitting there with everybody up in the room and he's like, "Oh, took the spark plugs out. I will not be getting run over tonight." Well, then we learn a little bit later, all the people who drove there, the 8 teenagers, are like, all our tires have been slashed, and you sit to yourself going, well, wait a minute, why would you took the spark plugs out of the van?
Out of the Taylor and the guy, the family
everybody,
van.
In case,
and you didn't know that.
Yeah,
so he decided that before he even killed the first two kids.
Right.
So he already knew what was going to happen the whole time, which is really cool.
Like I'm saying, I still think he had everything planned out. Plan A was everything that happens with Taylor and all that. Plan B, when he was explaining everything and taking him on a tour in the house, you know, all the windows have been screwed or nailed shut, and except for the second floor. And I think that was called Plan B, B for bullshit, just to try to throw Taylor off.
Yeah. So, I think everything was planned. Yeah, everything he did, he meant for.
There it was.
Oh, they got another one for you.
There it was. There we go. But, I mean, it's brilliantly written.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I really enjoyed it. I mean, there's parts, like I said in the beginning, that'll make you laugh. I mean, what cracked me up the first thing was, I didn't realize the first time I saw it how deep everything was going to go, but the brick with the monofilament line on it. I laughed my ass off at that. Like, something as simple as trying to make the door close. Okay, Taylor, you go over here and you pull this. I'm going to, you know, getting her involved in, you know, his thing. And I really don't think, you know, at that point, I think she just thought he was being silly, wasn't going to go through with it. Later on in the movie, she realizes he's dead fucking serious about this. And, you know.
That's what's cool about it. But yeah, I'm going to take a break.
Take a break.
We're going to take a break.
We got some good stuff.
Have some kills for you probably in the commercial break. And we will be back with some more, lots of more.
Oh, we haven't even gotten into
lots more
Easter eggs.
Lots more entertaining Easter eggs and facts for you. So we will be right back.
Don't go away.
Welcome back, everybody. Hope you enjoyed that nice little break from our annoying voices, I guess. A little surprise for you, though. I do want to say, as of, I think, today.
Wait a minute, I got to put the phone down because, I mean, I'm trying to take care of stuff from the break.
Yeah, well, talking with me. We got you.
Okay.
We're going to be starting, hopefully next week, it's launched, darkdiscussions.com, which is a new podcast network. Formerly horophilia.com. I used to be on that network, and a lot of shows are coming onto this new one. So we will be on, and our first episode on that network will be this one. So
I love it.
If you're listening now, thank you for listening live on Dark Discussions. And if you're watching this, thank you, and go on over to Dark Discussions and listen to all the other podcasts.
And if you guys have been listening through Facebook and then YouTube, thanks for being with us this whole time. We greatly appreciate it. We have a blast doing this.
Yeah, 20, man. Love it. So we will get back into Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon / Mancuso. So, pound it.
Pound it.
Bow it. From the movie. Go watch it. So, what do you got on your...
Now, it's interesting. You said, you know, Mancuso.
We
both know, and you guys now will know, this was a spoof of a slasher or horror movies by horror fans.
Mm-hmm.
Let's dive into some of the Easter eggs. And I've got a list here.
We're just going to go off your list.
Brilliant minds behind doing stuff. Might as well just go at the very beginning of the movie. Taylor standing outside of the Red Rabbit Lounge.
Rabbit and Red Lounge.
I'm calling it the Red Rabbit Lounge. Rabbit and Red, whatever you want to call
from
it.
From Halloween.
That's the, when Michael steals the car, that's the matchbook that Loomis finds.
The tow truck drivers.
So, yes. Yeah. I'm going to Scratch that off. Very beginning of the movie, we see an unmasked, unmakeup, unhockey-masked Kane Hodder.
We do.
That was supposedly the neighbor of one Frederick Krueger walking into 1428 Elm Street.
So, yeah, he lives in Freddy Krueger's house, which is a line that I didn't need. That's one line that I was like, she didn't need to say neighbor, because it really doesn't make sense. If you know it's Freddy's house, we know it's Freddy's house.
I'm still iffy about that whole
thing.
She should
have said, the line should have been, oh, can we talk to you about the man who used to live in your house? Why did she have to say your neighbor?
See, I'm still whole fuzzy on that whole thing, if that's...
Because it's his house. We know it's his house.
Where if it was, because, you know, in the sequels and everything, that's not what the house looked like. But that's neither here nor there.
But it had a red shutter, so it was from the original.
When Leslie is talking about, you know, making eye contact with that girl. You know, look at the... You know, we had an... Mm-hmm. There's three little girls in white in the back jump roping. Yeah. If you don't know what that is... One, two, he's gonna come and get you.
Right there he is.
Yep.
Right.
I got... Son of a... This one's a little bit, you know... I don't want to say obscure or whatever, but Eugene supposedly is Billy, the killer from the original Black Christmas.
Yeah.
If
you've never seen Black Christmas, go check out Black Christmas.
Yeah, you can see it a little bit. I mean, and the whole reason why I'm thinking that is the next thing, the last name Mancuso. Mm-hmm. There's two references to Mancuso. One would be, I believe it's Frank Mancuso, who produced almost, if not all, the Friday the 13th movies. But Nick Mancuso, who played Billy, the killer in the original Black Christmas. So, how am I doing so far?
Makes sense.
In Eugene and Jamie's living room, you can see the Hellraiser box.
Puzzle box.
To the left of...
He keeps putting his coffee cup over top of it to make you look over there a little bit.
Absolutely.
But they never reference it, so it's just in the background. That's cool.
This kind of... The car that, whenever they come up into Eugene and Jamie's place first, it kind of is similar color-wise, maybe make, I'm not sure about model, to the Evil Dead car that Sam Raimi used in probably everything. Ash versus Evil Dead, even the very first Spider-Man Tobey Maguire movie. It's the one that Uncle Ben was driving. Mm. Might be a little play on that. Church and Zoe.
Mm-hmm. It's turtles.
His pet turtles. Pet Cemeteries 1 and 2. The cat, Church, Zoe, the dog.
Yep.
Now, this one's a little bit... I mean, this goes real deep, and this goes back to my old horror movies. The name Mrs. Collinswood, the librarian. That was the name of one of the characters from The Last House on the Left. So, that had to be put in there.
Yeah.
I feel like a school teacher. Just
names are a big thing that spoofs use. They always... you have to kind of research some of them.
Names and stuff like that. You had Eugene's wife's name was Jamie.
Mm-hmm.
The last name of Kelly was Curtis. If we had a Lee...
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Bada bing. The Volkswagen bus that Taylor and Doug and Todd were driving around in, microbus Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original
right
one.
Right here. Right this guy. This guy right there.
That's him.
That's him.
That would be him.
Shout out to Art Clown. Hey, David.
Hi, Dave. When he's putting the makeup on. Now, there's a couple in this one. And I mean, I literally watched this last night trying to check out Easter eggs and stuff, and I saw the movie enough where I'm just focusing there and everything.
Yeah.
The music that he's playing, or is playing in the background when he's applying the makeup, is the music from the end of The Shining. When, you know, you see Jack Torrance finally go into the photo and everything. Mm-hmm. Not only that, you really got to look at it, but there is, the way they had the shot set up is Taylor's kind of reflected in the mirror. There's one shot where she says, so you're going to do something by killing her or whatever. The reflection of the lamp on the end table, there's blocks. And it either spells out red rum or murder. One way or the other. Well, it's going to be one or the other.
It's
one or the other. If it spells murder out in the real world, the reflection's red rum.
Shut up.
It's kind of hard to tell. I mean,
that's cool. Though.
But
I want to add, do you have any reference about the tire swing in front of the house? They kept showing it, and I have no idea what the reference would be.
thinking it was of swinging that behind too, her. And I can't.
In the beginning, there's a scene in front of Leslie's house. The tire swing showing behind Taylor.
The only thing I can think of is Pet Sematary. The tire swing from whenever, you know, there's a tire swing down at the bottom of the hill, but I don't know.
So if you guys know any reference for a movie that we don't know for a tire swing swinging in front on a, from a tree in front of a house, let us know in the comments.
Absolutely.
Because I don't know.
Well, and Leslie Vernon supposedly was, as a child, handcuffed or tied up and thrown over Nellis Falls. Nellis Air Force Base, the original Hills Have Eyes. I mean, these guys went deep into it. The last one, well, the next to the last one I have, Leslie's up there in the barn and with Taylor, and he starts crying. I'm so happy. Maniac. That was a disturbing scene from Maniac that was from. But, I mean, this is how deep these guys went. Now
Maniac is a disturbing movie if you haven't seen it.
Great.
But for a good old slasher.
Now, this one I might be reaching for. But once again, it's my trained eye from years and years of watching. When he's putting the makeup on, he's sitting at the table. To his right, at the little whatever vanity, there is a white bottle with a red cap. Okay, and the label, I couldn't zoom in far enough. That looks so reminiscent of the no-dose or the stay-awake pills from Nightmare on Elm Street. I'm not 100% sure on that. If anybody else thinks so, let us know. Even if the directors, the writers, the producers of this movie can either verify that for me. I mean, that's what I got.
It's cool. I mean, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's not like a blatant, you know.
But I mean, if it's there, and if you guys please check out the movie. I know it's 14 years old now, but it definitely holds up.
It's worth it. It's great. It's movie. So worth it. I mean, just watching how, you know, like I said, you watch all these slasher movies, and
yeah,
this actually shows you how what kind of in depth planning goes into everything.
And I was lucky enough to we're not friends or nothing, but meet at a convention Nathan, who plays Leslie, and Angela, I think her name is, who plays Taylor. Her right there. And they were really cool, really nice people.
Yeah, but see how buttoned up she is? Oh, everything, how it makes her look like she's, you know, you don't even think about it.
I want to show you, there's a picture coming up, but her sweater, I think they were trying to do Mrs. Voorhees. Look at her sweater.
It's a good possibility.
I think it looks like it.
But did it zip up?
No. No, the one you just saw did, but the other one doesn't.
Okay.
I got a picture of it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, if you guys please check it out, download it. I think it's available on Amazon Prime maybe or something.
Fire stick it, whatever you got to do. I mean, I've watched it on YouTube. It's on there for free. I mean, you got to really dig for it, but I found it accidentally.
I don't want to condone piracy. I want the actors and directors to get their money.
If it's on YouTube, I mean, what can you do? You can buy or rent it on YouTube.
I know. Yeah, you can buy it on YouTube, too. I saw that.
Buy or rent, whatever.
So, yeah, if you guys see anything that we didn't talk about, I guess, let us know, but you touched on a lot.
I don't know if I got them all, but
pretty much, I mean, you're naming the ones I knew or ones I didn't even realize, so,
Yeah, exactly. I will say this, though, at the end of what we said about watching through the credits, one of the people in the scene through the end credits is Kane Hodder. I just found that out.
What do you mean?
Well, what part of one of the two people in the scene at the end
the
credits?
What? Really?
Is Kane Hodder.
How?
Well, it's kind of easy. They filmed it and they said, "Hey, Kane, we need you to do this."
No, I'm trying to do this. Not him on there.
Nah,
I'm not saying it, but it's my way.
It's not this one. It's the other one.
Dude,
I'm telling you,
he looks small, young.
Well, the camera's really far
tiny,
away.
Little,
trust me, it's him.
I don't know.
It's been verified.
Where'd you see that at?
I'll show
check
it
your sources.
I will definitely show it to you after this because you know.
Anyway.
Nice little, you know, dead air there as we both sipped water.
We do that a lot. But yeah, this is one of my favorites, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot. Like I said, a lot of little secret stuff you can see. So
One of the things I really, you know, I mean, we kind of glossed over, but like for the first two-thirds of the movie, it's shot guerrilla style.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you don't see Todd and you don't see Doug until...
Yeah,
the last third of the movie, because they're the camera guys. Both of them are always filming. One's always kind of doing this, and it's always Taylor and Leslie, or and if they go to, you know, Eugene and Jamie's house, they're always on there, and they did it kind of like it's not, you know, well thought out. We've got this, that, until the end of the movie, until she grabs the camera and she goes to throw it into the van.
Oh, she said
the
documentary's over.
That's it. The documentary's over now.
Yeah, that's
the last third of the the last third of the film is shot like a normal film, steady cam or well thought out. Yeah. Everything else. It's interesting how they flipped everything.
Which I'm sure saved them a lot of money.
Well, I'm sure, too. And I know there's an industry term for it, where you switch how camera shooting styles were or something. But I just really thought it was interesting how they, you know, did that.
Just another smart thing that they thought of, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely cool.
Definitely, yeah. And like I said, once again, give us a watch. I mean, it's brilliant writing. I really thought, and it once again, it's not trying to ride the coattails or the, you know, what do you want to call it, the shroud tails or the cloak tails of, you know, Ghostface and everything from Scream, but it's...
See, that's the thing, is I wouldn't even compare it to it at all. I mean, I get where you're saying,
you know what I'm
but,
saying, yeah.
Yeah, like, you watch this, you don't think Scream at all.
Yeah, exactly, because, you know, in Scream, of course, Jason was, and Leatherface, all that. They were just movies.
They were movies, yeah.
But they were talking about the rules and everything of the movie. This kind of takes all that.
It's the rules, except Michael, Jason, Freddy, Chucky.
They were all real people. They weren't just, you know, film characters or whatever.
Like I said, they were R. Dahmer and you know, Manson,
right,
all them kinds.
But yeah, it's, you know, it's a different take on it. And to be honest with you, I really think the way they did it, and the idea of the script, and however. It was, once again, a really completely off-the-wall but original idea.
Yeah.
What if, you know, there was a film crew that was documenting the whole way of somebody who wants to be the next up-and-coming slasher, wants to be the next Krueger, wants to be the... I really enjoyed
it. They think about, like, how many urban legends there are that are just that, urban legends, that anybody could just say, hey, I'm going to come back, start killing people, and say I'm that person.
If you're from
the legend.
Yeah. If you're from around the area Jim and I grew up in, Beaver County, we had the legend of the Green Man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or what they rudely called him, Charlie No Face.
Yeah.
Do a Google search on Charlie No Face. Trust me.
Yeah, I know somebody who knew him personally.
Yep.
I mean, a lot of people did, but that's an urban legend that somebody could say, I'm going to come back and say that I'm the Green Man or I'm Charlie No Face and start killing people.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. And he was
that's what this movie is.
He was one of the nicest guys I've heard that ever was in Beaver County. I mean,
did too.
Tragic
My mom
accident.
Told me the same thing, yeah.
Tragic accident, but he lived.
Hmm?
So.
But that's the premise, though, which is. Smart, I think. I mean, it's definitely smart because every town has a legend.
Why don't they do a movie called Urban Legend? Never mind.
Oh, wait a minute. Why don't they make a good movie?
Good
movie called Urban Legend.
What else we got to talk about?
I don't know, man.
Anything else you want to touch
on? I don't.
Something in the movie? Anything else?
Am I missing anything?
Oh, no. Other than the fact that apparently one of the other smart things was, you know, whenever the first time Doc Halloran...
Mm-hmm.
Which is another Easter egg that I just popped into my head. Doc was the nickname of Danny Torrance, and Halloran is something, I think, from The Shining as well. I haven't seen that movie in decades. Yeah. But that whole scene, whenever Doc Halloran comes in, shoots at Leslie, he hits him in, I took one in the shoulder. Mm-hmm. Oh, are you okay? That's all right, I was wearing a vest.
Yeah.
Well, does that just completely break the whole thing of, like, what Eugene was saying? They kept coming back and coming back. Does that say that's how Jason was supposedly able to take
that
bullet?
Thing, yeah.
You know, it kind of... Did Michael wear one? I mean, I'm telling you right now, a bulletproof vest ain't going to stop a
because we saw blood coming out of the bullet wounds and stuff. No, I mean, it was cool that they referenced that, but if you fact check it, no, it doesn't really add up for the other killers, but it's cool that he talked about it.
And how excited they were. We got our Ahab! What the hell's an Ahab? And, you know, they kind of touch on it.
Yeah, it's basically going after your white whale.
Yeah,
Loomis,
the red herring thing, too. Yeah, well, before we touch on the red herring, the Ahab, what did they say? Somebody, no matter what, is going to try to justify good in the world, no matter what it takes, no matter what cost. Much like, you know, we said it too, he is Loomis, to Michael as Doc Halloran was to Leslie. Yeah. I mean, even down to the way the beard was shaped and the similar dress. Not
he had
dead
trench
nuts.
Coat.
Yeah, trench coat, whatever.
Yeah.
Had the gun.
Mm-hmm.
I mean.
But we're getting to see a serial killer that we, you know, that talks, jokes, so he has a combination of all the other ones.
Extremely seems like the guy next door normal, and all of a sudden, you know, something.
Yep.
And that one picture you just saw there where he's stretching out his face going, oh, and he's putting the makeup on and all that, and
when you
he's
realize,
fireproofing.
But when you realize that, like, oh, Christ, I lost it again.
Okay.
Shit, go back.
I don't want to go back.
What were we talking about?
Well, before you blew a brain fart, I was going to say we're going on a red herring. You know, what's a red herring? And you can almost tell that if you listen to his wording, it's almost he's trying to clue Taylor in that she's going to be the final girl. You know, it's kind of something to throw off, you know, Kelly. Well, I kind of read that as, and once again, I'm probably looking too deep into it, but that was kind of Leslie trying to almost prod Taylor and saying, guess what? This isn't what it's going to be. It's a red herring, but I'm just going to make it the library.
Yeah.
So it's
and I think Eugene and Jamie knew the whole time, too.
I think.
Because he keeps looking at her and saying, is this okay? You know.
Even,
they know.
Even the whole thing about Eugene saying, oh, she's a little spitfire. You know?
I like this one. Yeah,
I like this one. Well, you know, that might be, you know, some kind of retired slasher, you know, code of saying, hey.
This is warm. Yeah, that's funny.
Yep.
Yeah, like I said, little things like that you can notice and appreciate if you're a horror fan. So,
and Leslie didn't take too much damage in this, much like other people. I mean, he got the hand scythe in the side whenever he was choking Taylor.
Yeah, but you didn't
even
see it sticking out, so I don't even think it stuck in there.
Well,
I looked and then I didn't see it still sticking
exactly.
out.
Exactly, it didn't. She kind of stabbed him and did the old apple, squeezed the apple cider out of his Adam's apple.
he does. She squeezes his head in the apple press.
And then his last word, Taylor, I knew you were the one.
Yep.
So, you know, to make his legend.
Well, he said, after tonight, I'll either be on a run, in jail, or dead.
Well, yeah. Kind of.
So either he was
going
to kill Taylor because she wasn't the one and he was going to have to leave, or she was going to kill him, or they were going to call the cops on him, which he knew they could have because they couldn't sit there and let this happen. So he knew what was going to happen.
He only took, he took one shot in the shoulder, by a vest. He took the little hand side to the side.
Axe in the chest, but it didn't go in his chest. It was just a stick and it broke.
That's what I was going to ask next. I mean,
it just broke.
Somewhere he said the pickaxe was.
But she grabbed the regular axe.
She grabbed the regular axe.
From the back of the shed.
Yeah.
Because she thought it was okay. It wasn't.
He rigged a pickaxe. But that's what she exactly, when she swung.
It broke.
I thought she hit him, but. Apparently it came off.
No,
the sledgehammer was
back.
Rigged and all that shit.
And then when she set the thing on fire, she threw the stick, the axe handle, into the fire because it broke. And she was saying, screw you.
I want to know is, how the hell did Doc Halloran survive? I mean, it looked like he got...
Yeah, I mean,
did he kind of miss? Because the way he went down and that pain that
he was definitely stabbed, but probably just sliced, like, right here.
And poor Doug. If you want to go... If you want her, you're going to have to go through me. Clonk! You're done.
I love her. Yeah. He didn't care.
Yeah.
But it was funny, setting all the traps, setting all the, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, oh, wait, he didn't pull her off the ladder, and then 5 minutes later, he pulls her
off the ladder.
So he had it all planned. Yeah. It just didn't happen in the time he told
exactly.
it was going to happen.
Well, that's kind of like I said, that plan A, plan B, a little bit from here, whatever. It was, you know.
Yeah.
I loved his different ways of getting into places to make it look like he was either supernatural or whatever, you know, being able to. Come out of here, go here.
Yeah.
He, like, even whenever he killed the first stoner in the shed, you know, and that guy's like, oh, what's going on? You know,
he disappears behind the other guy.
Like, he came out behind the shed, behind the other one, and he's holding that damn post hole digger.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, they play on everything. They really do. They play on everything.
They definitely don't rely on the gore or anything, so it's
not like that.
It's a smart movie, so I think people who are like, I don't like watching horror movies because of the gore, you'll still...
Yeah.
Appreciate this if you just appreciate a good script.
They left it to your imagination.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, maybe...
I want to say real quick, in the library, there's an improvised scene where Leslie says, Paradise Lost, found it. Nathan improvised that scene, I read.
Okay.
It wasn't even in the script, so he just picked up that. He turned and saw it there, and he just thought to say that.
Oh, I didn't know that. Are there any deleted scenes?
I haven't looked for any. So
I'm going to have to check and see if there's some deleted scenes. I mean, every good movie has deleted scenes or
you would think.
Whatever, you know. But that's all I've got.
That's all I got. But this is a 9.5 out of 10 for me.
I'm giving it a 9.
Yeah, I mean, I love this movie.
Like I said, it was fresh. It was, I think it was an original idea.
It's hard to actually talk about the other horror movies and still come off as original. Like,
oh, yeah,
it's
really
original.
Is. Yeah.
Even though they're doing exactly what the other movies do,
and like,
it's original.
And like you kept, you know, joking about, you know, you're gonna get the name right, you know, Behind the Music, like VH1. It was behind the mask. I mean, you know,
Their eyes.
And that's the other thing too. I really like that mask. It's just so plain.
Yeah.
And just, you know, it
a little hair on the top.
A little hair on the top. Yeah.
Little straps in the back. I mean, it's nothing crazy like the other ones are. And then hopefully. Some point they get the funding and script to make Behind the Mask the return of Leslie Vernon. Hopefully.
Yeah, I would like to see
it. It'll be awesome. So we'll see what happens.
I'd actually, you know, volunteer time to be in it. I mean,
oh, please.
I'll do it. Absolutely. I don't care. I mean, you know, ram a post hole through my chest. I mean,
for real or not, I don't care. Just give me a movie.
Well, let's not go that far.
As long as I can wear my Slashcast shirt.
Yeah, really.
In the movie. We'll just be standing there and you can kill us.
Hey, you know, we could be doing a podcast from Leslie Vernon's... Hey! Wow!
What?
We could be doing a podcast from Leslie Vernon's house and everything, and it could be
you
like...
You want to go to Oregon?
Well, Oregon, wherever, you know.
That's where they film the movie.
I don't care. Oregon, whatever, you know.
I don't know.
They could be, you know, that could be like a little throw into, like, you know, Halloween Resurrection. Kind of a movie about, you know, we're going to go to Michael Myers' house and we're going to...
Oh, yeah.
I'm really stretching.
All right. We're good, though.
All right.
Thank you for watching and listening now on darkdiscussions.com. And I think Facebook would be Dark Discussions Network. I'm not sure, but we'll have more information on the next episode. But hopefully this one will be on that website soon. So
yes,
check it out. Thanks for watching, listening for episode 20. I was Jim.
I'm still Chevy.
And we will see you next time.
See you guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.